look to him more like furniture store showrooms than homes where people actually spent their lives. Without being asked, the butler poured al-Bashir a tall glass of tea. He sipped at it, appreciating the trace of mint he tasted. Above the bar he saw was a larger-than-life painting of a fleshy, nude woman.
"Rubens!" came Garrison's voice from behind him.
Al-Bashir turned and saw the old man wheeling up noiselessly across the plush carpet.
"It's an original, of course."
Garrison waved an arm.
"They're all originals. Cost a mint, each of 'em. Raphael, Paramone Haystacks. That etching over there is by Rembrandt."
"They're magnificent," al-Bashir said.
"Yep. Nice to look at now and then. Make you realize what it's all about. Got a mural by Da Vinci on the ceiling over my bed," he cackled evilly. "That one's just a reproduction, though, but it impresses the women."
Al-Bashir smiled down at him. His own home outside Tunis had no images on its walls. That was not permitted. But there were many women. As Garrison led him through the opulent apartment, pointing out artworks as he rolled his powered chair across the plush carpeting, al-Bashir began to understand why the old man had invited him to his home. "He's showing me what he's accumulated over all these years. He's begging me not to take all this away from him." Al-Bashir smiled tolerantly down at the wizened cripple and thought, "You can keep it all, Garrison. All except the power." Dinner was served by the butler, who was the only servant in sight. Garrison sat at the head of the long dining room table, al-Bashir on his right. The old man's wheelchair was a shade lower than the other high-backed chairs. It made Garrison look almost like a child seated at a table too high for him. He ignored that, though, as they ate delicately seasoned veal and talked about business. At last Garrison asked,
"Randolph still giving you the runaround?"
al-Bashir made a smile. "It's a delicate situation, almost to the point of amusement."
"Nothing amusing about $1.5 billion, Garrison muttered.
"I'm beginning to think that perhaps my approach to Randolph has been wrong."
"What do you mean?"
With a rueful little pout, al-Bashir said, "The man seems pathologically unable to make a decision on selling part of his company to us."
"His funeral, then. He needs the money he sells. Otherwise he can piss in his pants for all I care."
"I would agree, except for one thing."
"Yamagata?"
Al-Bashir dipped his chin in acknowledgement. "This old man is no fool," he reminded himself. "You must treat him with respect. He is quite capable of ambushing you if you are not careful."
"I don't want to see the Japs get their paws on that power satellite any more than you do," Garrison said,
holding a forkful of veal poised between the platter and his mouth.
"I want 'em buying our oil, not pulling in energy from outer space."
"This man Scanwell is a factor, too," al-Bashir said. Garrison snorted.
"Do you know him?"
"Personally, I mean."
"I knew him," the old man replied, "before he fixed his eyes on the White House and started all this energy independence bullshit."
"He apparently has allied himself with Randolph."
"Yep. And he won't come within 10 miles of me. I'm the big, bad oil industry."
"Scanwell could be trouble if he's elected." Strangely, Garrison smiled. A sly, knowing smile.
"Let him get himself elected. Once he's in the White House, we'll show him who the real players are in this business."
Al-Bashir felt genuinely surprised.
"You believe you can contain him?"
"Son, we'll control him. The same way we've controlled all the other presidents."
"But how can you control the president? After all, he's the most powerful..."
"The hell he is!" Garrison snapped. "You think he's powerful? Ha! We'll lay down the law to him just like always."
"I don't understand."
"You'll see. You know what they say in Washington? The president proposes, but the Congress disposes. And we've got Congress. Enough of 'em, anyway. Got 'em right here."
Garrison patted his pants pocket. "And you believe you can handle Scanwell the same way?" Al-Bashir felt impressed.
"Presidents come and go," Garrison said. "Some of our congressmen and senators have been there through 5 and 6 administrations."
"I see,"
said Al-Bashir with newfound understanding.
Scanwell and his energy independence, Garrison chuckled. We'll tie him up in knots.
That leaves Randolph, then.
We've got to keep him from going to Yamagata.
He really doesn't want to sell any of his stock to us, Al-Bashir said. He's deathly afraid that once we're into his company, we'll take it over completely.
That's the main idea, isn't it?
Yes, but we can't do it if he won't sell to us.
Garrison chewed thoughtfully for a moment, then asked,
What do you recommend?
For a long moment, Al-Bashir remained silent. We both know that what I recommend, he said to himself, is what we will do.
At last he said,
We'll do as he asks. Extend a loan to him.
Give in to him?
Appear to give in to him, Al-Bashir said placatingly. Let him think that he's won. Loan him what he needs, but only on a monthly basis. Keep him tied to us.
On a shoestring, Garrison muttered.
While the price of his stock keeps slipping.
And we quietly buy it up through third parties so he doesn't know we're taking him over until it's too late.
Exactly, said Al-Bashir.
Garrison laughed his cackling, rasping snicker.
We won't have to pony up the 1.5 bill. Nowhere near it.
Probably not, Al-Bashir agreed.
By Christ, you're even sneakier than I am, Garrison said approvingly.
A win-win situation, Al-Bashir congratulated himself as he rode the private elevator to the lobby and the limousine waiting for him at the curb. Garrison believes we will eventually get control of Astro Corporation. Randolph will believe that he's getting the money he needs to finish the power satellite without selling out his company. And I will be able to use the satellite to destroy Randolph and the very idea of generating energy from space. And kill many thousands of Americans into the bargain.
Matagorda Island, Texas. Claude Passeau had a quizzical look on his face as he walked with Dan along the stacks. 8 solid propellant rockets lay on their sides in the big warehouse, each of them bigger than a blue whale, all of them painted gleaming white with Astro Corporation's stylish logo emblazoned along their flanks.
You seem to have worked some sort of minor miracle, Passeau said.
Dan shook his head. His eyes focused on the crew of technicians, who were carefully slipping a cradle around the farthest of the rockets in preparation for lifting it into a sling and carrying it to the next building. There it would be stood upright and mated with the smaller upper stage that carried the electronic flight systems.
Getting Lockheed Martin to build these boosters at such a low price, Dan replied.
No miracle. Just competitive bidding. And mass production. Instead of asking them for 1 or 2, I ordered a dozen. With an option for 6 dozen more.
That's not what I'm talking about, and you know it, Passeau said.
Dan looked at the smaller man. The FAA administrator looked crisp and cool in a beige summer weight suit.
Is this silk? Dan asked, fingering the jacket collar.
You're avoiding the issue, Dan.
What issue?
The change in the weather.
Oh?
With a bemused smile, Passeau said,
The prevailing wind from Washington has changed direction, my friend.
Has it? Dan asked innocently.
Decidedly. Instead of being furious at you for your unauthorized test flight, my superiors have instructed me to wrap up the crash investigation and give you a clean bill of health.
That's Jane's doing, Dan thought. A U.S. senator can make a bureaucracy jump, especially when the bureaucracy's budget is coming up on the Senate floor soon. But then he wondered, has Garrison anything to do with this? He wants to buy me out, but a defunct Astro Corporation wouldn't be any good to him. Or would it?
Genuinely puzzled, Dan asked, What does a clean bill of health mean?
Still smiling, Passeau said,
My final report will not mention the word sabotage. That would be too epistemological. I am merely to conclude that the cause of the crash was specific to your O-1 aircraft and not due to any inherent flaw in its design or your operational procedures.
That's what your final report's going to say?
Yes. I thought you'd be pleased to hear it.
I am, Claude.
Very pleased.
Yet Dan felt no elation, no surge of relief.
Well, it's the truth, isn't it?